Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we're back. Back again for another season of Wine School Dropout. This season is super special to me as it is an abroad season from a destination that was at the top of my bucket list. Before we get to this season, though, I want to talk to you about what's going on with Wine School Dropout in general. We started this podcast bringing you episodes to give you a basic understanding of wine, like what do vintages really mean, why is wine priced the way it is, what makes sparkling wine sparkling, things like that. Then we moved into introducing you to the people that work in and around the wines you drink on an international level. You really like that. So you spoke and we listened. Going forward, Wine School Dropout will stay true to its name, still schooling you, but not talking about the tasting notes and such. We'll be talking about regions, culture, food pairings, where to go for the greatest wine experiences. Sound good? Think of it as an ears on, because it's a podcast. Learning experience that you wouldn't get in a formal classroom or in school. You'll learn grapes and soil and winemakers, and also the best places to travel for wine and what to expect when you arrive. What do you think about that? Still along for the ride? Fantastic. Let's get into our newest season. Season 5, Wine School Dropout, Semester Abroad. I gave a little teaser at the end of last week's episode mentioning Champagne. Any other region outside of Champagne must call their sparkling wine something else, even if they use the same method. I had the pleasure of meeting Andiswa Mafeba at a wine dinner. She mentioned that she brought some of the wine she made to the dinner. The sparkling wine she made. This young Black African woman is in the wine industry and making sparkling wines at a major producer in South Africa. Clearly, we had to talk more. In today's episode, you'll hear Andiswa's story of how she got into wine, sparkling wine, and what's going on in the South African wine industry right now. Enjoy. Tell everyone who you are and what do you do?
Firstly, thank you for having me. I'm Andiswa. I am a South African Cup Classic winemaker. I work for Bosch & Dahl Wines, and started working with them on the 1st of December last year. So this was my first vintage with them. Before that, I was working for Distel that you, I think most people know. I was also doing Cup Classique and barrel maturation. I am 31 years of age, and I really like saying that. Yeah, and I have a sheer passion for senses. I have a sheer passion for tasting, smelling, and everything. But more importantly, I have a sheer passion for Cup Classique. How I got introduced to Cup Classique was I kind of sort of fell into it, and it just became such a passion for me. And I think it's one of the wines that are truly, truly rewarding. You give back, it gives back tenfold of the amount of effort that you give. So yeah, I am loving every part of Cup Classique.
Now, for those listeners that don't quite know, can you please explain to us Cup Classique?
So Cup Classique is basically the South African version of Champenois, method Champenois. So in South Africa, we would then call it method Cup Classique. Cup comes from the word Cape, Classic means just a classic wine. It's an elegant wine. It's finesse, and everything else. So it is basically very much similar to Champenois method, but obviously the grapes are all South African, and yeah, from the South African soil. And also, I'm sure you've tasted, there are certain differences that are quite prevalent in Cape Classic as opposed to method Champenois wines, purely because of the terroir.
What are the grapes that you use? Because in Champagne, they use Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay. I know you have Chardonnay in South Africa, and I think some Pinot Noir as well. What are the grapes that are in the blend for Cape Classic?
So mainly the grapes that are being used are, as you say, Chardonnay, we have Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier, even though we don't have much of the Pinot Meunier. But more importantly, I think because South Africa has been blessed with so much good Chenin Blancs, a couple of the winemakers are also experimenting with Chenin Blancs. We also have experimented a bit with Pinotage. So I think the scale in which what we can give into Cape Classic is growing. So it's not just the traditional stuff. It also has that South African feel to it.
And what are some of the differences in the final product of Cape Classic versus Champagne? Maybe the flavors of the grapes and then the flavors of the resulting sparkling wine. How are those different?
There is definitely a flavor difference. Personally, I've never tasted grapes from Champagne, but based on science and what we know, obviously the total acidity in Champagne grapes and obviously Champagne wine would then naturally be higher because of the fact that it's colder winters. And obviously, it's just the way of the terroir, whereas South African summers are really warm. There's the terroir is then produces riper grapes, but at a very natural ripeness. So obviously, when you taste your juice, it will be slightly more of, which is not what we want, actually, more of slight thiols, but the right concentration of thiols that you then obviously get in your Cape Classic. But when I say slight, it's very minimum, because you don't want, because Cape Classic and Champagne are such delicate wines, you don't want anything that will overpower your Cape Classic. Yeah, so it's mainly the ripeness and obviously the acidity. In the Southern Hemisphere, we are allowed to add acid. And I know in France, no acidity is needed because it's not needed, right? Mm-hmm. So we adjust our acidities, obviously based as per winemaker's choice as to how much they want. And obviously during the winemaking process, there's also dropout. So there are a lot of things to consider when it comes to acidity, especially obviously when you are based in the Southern Hemisphere.
So it seems like there's a lot of science that goes into this, which is a slightly different than the other styles of winemaking, because this requires the two fermentations and a little bit more manipulation than with other things. Are there a lot of Cape Classic producers? Is there a large production of Cape Classic in South Africa?
Based on, well, the proportion of producers, Cape Classic producers, as opposed to other still wine producers, it's growing. I think we have over 100 Cape Classic producers that are in the Cape Classic Association. But obviously, there are people who are not a part of the Cape Classic Association that may not be well known. It's a growing art. Because that's what winemaking is. It's a growing art. And I think more and more people and more consumers are starting to appreciate Cape Classic, even if it's within South Africa or globally.
For you, why Cape Classic as opposed to making anything else in South Africa? Why just focus on Cape Classic?
Well, why Cape Classic? And I think I was fortunate enough to be in a position to make Kaplasik, but I didn't read too much into it. But once I delved into it deeper and deeper, that's when I knew that there's nothing else that I'd rather make other than Kaplasik. It's time, it's effort, but it's so gratifying. And for me, I always say Kaplasik is like, you're given a blank canvas and you can just paint whatever you like. And your efforts are equivalent to the amount of ink you're adding. The more effort you add, the more ink and paint and color that you add. It's, yeah, like I said, it's an art. And I think the more you give, the more you get. So that's what it is for me. And for me, I think the taste is subjective, but for me, I think my palate is more inclined to taste delicate flavors and to make obviously something as delicate and fine and as elegant as Kaplasik. Yes, I enjoy a good red wine every now and then, but my go-to is Kaplasik.
What do you think is something that people get wrong about Kaplasik, or something that you wish people knew about Kaplasik?
Firstly, I think I would speak for most South Africans. It's not champagne.
They use the word champagne in such a generic way. Everything sparkling is champagne.
Yeah.
Kaplasik, Prosecco, Cava, it's all champagne.
Exactly. All champagne. It's not champagne. We're not competing with champagne. It's something different. And it's something different that also deserves a chance within this, when I say sparkling wine world. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to South African wines, a lot of people just see the price of the wine and they immediately think that you're not going to get that value for that. Whereas South African wines are well priced and you are getting so much more when it comes to the value and the pricing.
Now, I read a little bit about you, and you kind of got into wine and specifically Kaplasik in an interesting way. Can you lead us through that a little bit?
Yeah, my path was very interesting. I got introduced to, I didn't even know it was a discipline or a science that you could go into. So growing up, I was a bit nerdy, but I like to have a little fun and I like to be different. So end of my 12th grade, which is matric, I obviously now had to decide what careers I'm going to focus on. And as soon as I got this, I got a scholarship to study winemaking, and I got accepted at this University of Stellenbosch. But my family said, no, you are not going there. You are going to study anything else, anything but. And I know, look, within the African community, something like wine is frowned upon because it's associated with alcoholism, it has bad connotations, and so on. But I managed to end up in Stellenbosch the following year through a lot of begging and some tears. I then started with my viticulture and oenology degree from Stellenbosch, and I went on. Actually, during that time in my fourth year, I did an internship, and then I realized, hey, there's so much more to winemaking or the wine industry other than actual winemaking. And then instead of going straight to work after I finished my degree, I then went on to do my master's in consumer sensory research because I wanted to learn more about the senses. Like I said, I think I'm a sense freak. I wanted to learn more about the senses and how to better position your product, how to read consumers' perceptions in order to make the best product as possible. And I think within the South African scope, that is something that is still missing. But I mean, Rome was not built in a day. I think we're making good strides towards that. Afterwards, I got myself the job after 9 months of searching. And I started with Distel, and I was there for 3 vintages. And then afterwards, where I was doing Kaplasik and looking after barrels. So I was doing barrel maturation also. And then I started working for Washington DGB. So it's been a short stint. I mean, we've got winemakers that have worked for a very long time. And I think I was fortunate and blessed, and also obviously through hard work, enough to gain positions in very big corporations and have very big roles at such a short amount of time. But I think it's all hard work and just being prepared.
Absolutely. And the fact that you just kind of kept going and kept building on, like, okay, I am interested, so let me apply for this program. Okay, let me go to school. Okay, let me try to get this internship. Okay, you got that internship. And just kind of kept going down that path, and through your persistence, consistency, and then also your hard work.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think that's something that you have, this thing called imposter syndrome. Just like a drop of imposter syndrome helps you to push even harder.
Now, so this is the nice and light and good part. I do want to ask you, because people are listening to this, so they don't know that you are a Black South African.
Yes.
How many other Black South African winemakers are there? Are there a large quantity, considering it is Africa?
No. Considering the amount of the proportion of Black people in Africa and in South Africa, and the amount of winemakers, there's definitely a shortage. And this is something, obviously, most people don't want to, it's still the elephant in the room. They don't really want to talk about it because they're the minority. And there's definitely a lot of growth that needs to be instilled. But I think if it wasn't for instance, for me, I got a scholarship from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, because I mean, going to tertiary as anyone is expensive. So for me, I had no other choice but to get a scholarship. Otherwise, I would not have gone to university or even lasted that long. So I think there are strides that are being made by our government, and there are small spaces like the Pinotage Youth Development Academy that are not necessarily to have having tertiary qualifications, but they are advancing people of color into the wine industry, as well as the protege program, which also only allows non-white graduates. So it's growing, but there's a big lack.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for having more people of color in South Africa in the wine industry? Is it education? Is it money? Is it lack of opportunity? Is it people not feeling welcome?
It is multi-layered. It's everything. It's everything that you just said, because going back to, if we look at South Africa's past, apartheid led to everything that you've just mentioned. And obviously, having a past like that is going to instill fear for industries like the wine industry. It is going to instill some sort of disinterest because it is associated with a certain group of people. So I think, yeah, it's really multi-layered. And once you actually get into the wine industry, you soon get to realize that it's all fear. It is all fear. You just need to put yourself out there, and yeah, the rest is going to work out for itself if you put yourself out there.
What would you say personally has been one of your biggest challenges in the wine industry itself or in wine making?
One of my biggest challenges within the wine industry is, I think also the distribution of males to male to female, that's another challenge, but it's also growing. There are a number of women who are, for instance, the cellar masters, or they are head winemakers for a division within the wine companies. So it's still, I think gender also plays a role.
And sometimes age as well, because the wine industry tends to be much older than we are. And some people are thinking like, oh, well, what do you know? You haven't been drinking wine that long. You haven't been doing this long enough. And it's like, well, you have to start somewhere. Like, we don't just wake up and we're 75, okay? We have to start at 21 and then
that is so true.
Get older.
That is so true. That's very true. And obviously, like, for instance, a person like me, when I started with winemaking, I was drinking sweet, cheap wine when I wasn't supposed to.
We all start somewhere. We all start with that. We all start there.
And as soon as I got into it, then obviously it's an acquired taste. Well, alcohol's an acquired taste. It's an acquired art. You get better at it. And obviously with some time, you become that what you want to be. And I think obviously, as you mentioned, age does play a role. It really does. Because you have people that were raised in cellars, who you have people that used to go in with their fathers or whoever or their opas tasting wines in the cellar, whereas you only started tasting wines at the age of 19 or 20 when you got to varsity.
That question may have been asked about challenges, so it may have been challenging to answer and also not as light and breezy as the rest of this interview. So let's change it up a little bit. What is one of your accomplishments that you are the most proud of?
If I should say, I think that the more experience I get in the industry, the more I shock myself. Like, I got into Distel and then I was like, wow, I'm doing this. Now I'm making Bosch & Dahl Cup Classic. And I can truly say, without bashing any people, that this year for me has been the year for me when it comes to the quality of wine I've made. It really has. So I think the further I go, the more I surprise myself. So the base wines were, I mean, I was shocked. But it's that effort that you put in. That's why Cup Classic is so gratifying.
And you're only going to get better.
Yeah. So it's actually amazing.
If you weren't making wine, what do you think you would be doing?
If I wasn't making wine, I would have gone into a different discipline that also involves senses. I think I would go into the aroma therapy or perfumery.
I was going to say, you'd be making perfume? Nice.
Yeah. I would definitely do something like that.
When you aren't drinking Cap Classique, what are you drinking?
White wine. Red wine is for food, I tell you. Red wine for me is just for food. I enjoy a nice and light white wine. Or if I'm having white wine with food, then I like a white wine that's more on the rich and ripe scope of life. But I'm very light. I like delicate styles and delicate flavors.
What advice would you give to other women or other people of color that are considering getting into the wine industry?
Okay, so I would say, firstly, do not doubt yourself. Anything is possible if you put your mind to it. And once you get in there, don't get too comfortable. Don't get too comfortable. I'm not saying be scared or always be on the lookout. Just do not get too comfortable. Be consistent in your craft. Do the checks. Do the research. And for me, I would say, as an introvert, network is very important. Yes, you'll be cringing like for an hour or so and go back home and knock your head onto a wall. It'll all be worth it. Do not get comfortable. Yeah, don't relax. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and this gentleman said, the thing about the youth today, they tend to leave situations because they are not fulfilled because they think that they're not doing or getting what they love. But sometimes in order to do or get what you love, you have to be uncomfortable for that little moment, and then you'll be good. That's just a hurdle that you need to cross over. That's what I've learned.
Yeah, and sometimes we are so close to a breakthrough or making it, but we're like, no, this isn't it. I'm not going to get there. I'm uncomfortable. And then just turn around and move into something else. With a lot of things, as evidenced by your career and some things that you've said already, being persistent and then also consistency. You have to do the same thing over and over again in order to get results. And that some people just kind of quit too soon or stop too soon.
It doesn't work like that. So I think with the little expense that I have, the amount of expense that I have, that's what I've learned and I've kept to it.
So what's next for you? What else do you want to do this year and the next few years with Cap Classique, with Beauchandal?
So what's next for me is that I will continue to do what I'm doing, because I think something like Cap Classique is something that needs to be perfected. And I am not where I want to be when it comes to my craft and my art. So I'll continue. And if avenues open up, they open up. But I will continue to do what I'm doing and do it the best way I know how to, and do the research that I need to do in order to become the best, or to get to where I want.
Okay. Thank you. I love that. I love that. If we want to find your wines, are you just mainly in South Africa, or do you export to the States or Europe or anywhere else?
No, we export to the States and Europe. The States, I know there's Cape Classics. We also stock through Urban Grape. But the States, anywhere that is distributed by DGB, will definitely have Beauchandal. And then in the UK, Waitrose. And then obviously, I think we're very popular in the Scandinavian countries,
okay.
Norway, Sweden.
I'll pop up to London and grab some, no problem.
Please do.
No problem. Please again, do. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you doing this interview, and I can't wait to share you and your story with the world.
Thank you so much, and it's an absolute pleasure.
What a story, right? I just love Andiswa's enthusiasm and fresh approach to life, winemaking, and just what she wants to do in her career. I kind of wish I had her insight at her age, but I guess we get what we need when we need it, yeah? Andiswa is definitely a rising star in the winemaking industry of South Africa, and specializing in Cap Classique further sets her apart from the pack. If you want more information about the wine she makes at Beauchandal, visit their website, beauchandal.com. They're also under social media at the same name, Beauchandal. And special thank you to Tawani Price, Wine School Dropout, Wine Around the World, Season 2, Episode 6, guest. Go back and listen to that episode for more information on South Africa.
Thank you for listening to Wine School Dropout. This podcast was produced by Studio Ochinta and hosted by me, Tanisha Townsend.
Our executive producer is Lori Martinez.
Sound design and production by Luis Lopez. Production coordination by Catalina Hoyos. Our theme was done by Gabriel Damaso. Music is by Makai Beats. Our art is by Tiffany DeLoon. Follow us at Wine School Dropout on Instagram. If you like the show, tell a friend about it and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, sit back, relax, and have a glass.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.